Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 19th, 2015. We will begin today's reading with an article by Allison Petty, "Council Won't Tip Hand on Aldi," from Decatur. Months of uncertainty about the potential location of a new Aldi store on the city's north side will come to a head Monday with a Decatur City Council vote. Neighbors of the site, at the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51, have passionately opposed rezoning that would allow the development, citing concerns about traffic, safety, property values, and quality of life. Developers say that Aldi would be a good neighbor, with the store designed to prevent cars from stacking up as they try to enter. The site is desirable because of its high traffic count and visibility, and failure to secure it could send the new store to Forsyth. That would mean a loss of sales tax dollars at a time when city coffers face strain from several sources, including years of flat or declining revenues and uncertainty at the state level. Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe said the decision would be a very difficult one for the council, which will meet in the Decatur Civic Center Theater to accommodate what is expected to be a large crowd. "I'm not going to commit at this point," Moore Wolfe said. "I want to hear from the neighbors. I want to hear from the company's representative. I want everybody to understand what we potentially lose because I don't know how you make that up." Under the plan, Aldi would close its store on Pershing Road and attempt to sell that building. At 18,000 square feet, the new store would be roughly 3,000 square feet larger. Customers would enter and exit off West Ash Avenue, where a left turn lane would be added. About 12 trucks each week would make deliveries through an entrance on West Oak Lane. The owners of 5 homes and a vacant lot on the property have reportedly agreed to sell. If the rezoning is not approved, Aldi's Director of Real Estate, Mike Roche, has said the company would look elsewhere along U.S. Business 51, somewhere between Target and Menards. Ed Flynn, a local attorney representing the developers, has said that Forsyth officials have expressed interest. A survey of the council members last week found the majority waiting to take a position. Councilman Jerry Dawson and Pat McDaniel were the exceptions, with both opposing the rezoning. McDaniel made his feelings known in a news release. He said the rezoning would contradict the council's previous pledge to protect city neighborhoods. "As a member of the Decatur City Council, it is my responsibility to promote and foster further responsible community economic development growth," he said. "But it is also my responsibility to protect the quality of life and public safety elements within our community that Decatur residents count on." Dawson, who used to live in the neighborhood, said he received tons of emails and phone calls from people urging him to vote against the rezoning. He said he told them he would be willing to throw the neighborhood under the bus if the proposed project were a larger one, something that could generate considerable sales tax and traffic from surrounding communities. "If it was something that was going to draw people here and be a shot in the arm financially, I would sacrifice the neighborhood," Dawson said, "but I'm not going to for a grocery store that's already here." Council members Chris Funk, Dana Ray, and Bill Faber did not take a position, saying they would wait to hear from residents, Aldi representatives, and city staff at the meeting. Faber said he would also consider the effect of the decision on future generations. "The Indian chiefs of the Sioux and Navajo, they used to say that when the chief council make a decision, they need to project 200 years into the future. 7 generations or so must be considered when any decision is being made in the community," he said. "And sometimes we don't always do that." Councilwoman Lisa Gregory could not be reached for comment. City Manager Tim Gleason said he did not know what the outcome of the vote would be, but said the city would likely continue to receive inquiries from developers if Aldi does not locate there. "There is an interest in that corridor on the west side. That's not suggesting that the answer would change if it is no from the city elected," he said. "But I don't think it's going to be uncommon for us to have these requests from potential development. It's a very desirable location." Also, from the Government and Politics page, Decatur City Council to Cover Hotel Agreement by Allison Petty. The Decatur City Council will consider an agreement to spur development of a Hampton Inn on the city's east side Monday, though the move is likely to be overshadowed by a more contentious topic. The council meeting was moved to the Decatur Civic Center Theater to accommodate what is expected to be a large crowd of residents opposed to development of an Aldi in their neighborhood. The council will consider rezoning that site near the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51. By comparison, the hotel agreement is not expected to draw much fanfare, but City Manager Tim Gleason said he was excited about the agreement, which was received and filed by the council at its October 5th meeting. He said it's important for city officials not to offer incentives automatically, but to consider what opportunities they might create. We should be very conscientious when we are offering incentives and try to look at the greater good. I think this is a perfect example of that because there will be things that follow this hotel opportunity in that part of Decatur, he said. Under the agreement, the city would return to developer Steve Horve half of the hotel-motel tax it collects in the hotel's first 5 years. The incentive is meant to help reimburse Horve for the cost of construction, estimated to be more than $7 million. The hotel would be on a currently vacant 2.61 acres at 4855 East Evergreen Court. And from the education page by Teresa Churchill, senior writer at the Herald and Review, Middle School Soccer Jamboree Nets Cancer Awareness. The sixth annual Come Together Let's Walk, which supports breast, cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancer programs, is more than 8 months down the road. But Lauren Jacobson, an eighth grader at Johns Hill Magnet School, is glad she didn't have to wait that long to get her pink on for the cause. As a kid, you kind of don't get to do that much, she said Friday after her team tied Dennis and Garfield schools in the first game of a middle school soccer jamboree. It's fun to do something important. Lauren and her teammates wore special pink t-shirts and knee socks Friday afternoon for the team's second ever pink fundraiser benefiting Come Together Let's Walk. Coach Holly Peckert said the first one 2 years ago raised $2,000, and she wanted to do another one now that her paternal grandmother, a breast cancer survivor, is battling ovarian cancer. We have $800, and that's not counting what we get today, Peckert said. This is about more than wearing pink. Cindy Diedrich-Wolfer, director of Come Together Let's Walk, said youth getting involved with an event held every June in Fairview Park is especially gratifying. The money's great, but seeing people understand the fight against these cancers at a younger age, that's even better, she said. Somewhat coincidentally, several members of the Thomas Jefferson Raiders also sported pink accessories and face paint in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and the late grandmother of seventh grader Cheyenne Critchfield, who died of breast cancer. I never got to meet her, Cheyenne said. Among Johns Hill's fans who were also in the pink was Susie Davis, grandmother of sixth grader Madison Bain. I think it's wonderful to give children the experience of helping others, Davis said. Marie Schaefer, an eighth grader at Johns Hill, said she collected donations from family members and her church. We're not just playing a sport today, she said. Classmate Emily King Nobles said the 2014 death of her speech teacher from lung cancer and the pink worn Friday by fans, friends, and opponents illustrated the fight against cancer is never very far away. It shows we have a common cause even when we're on opposite sides, Emily said. In the next article from the local page of the Herald and Review, Decatur volunteer honored at regional conference. One of Decatur's tireless neighborhood volunteers was recognized earlier this month for her efforts to make the community a better place. Jean Mears, an active volunteer with the Park City Neighborhood Organization, received the Stella Stewart Doing Good in the Neighborhood Award October 2nd at the Regional Neighborhood Network Conference in Bowling Green, Kentucky. The conference was attended by a group representing Decatur, as well as cities in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Decatur nominates someone for the award every year, said Rochelle Irons, the city's Director of Neighborhood Services. Mears is the first local winner. Anything she can do to help, that's what she does, Irons said. She is retired and just doesn't let the grass grow under her feet. She's always getting out there and doing things. In fact, Irons and several co-conspirators worked hard to convince an unsuspecting Mears to attend the conference. She had been planning to stay in Decatur to help with an event at Park City. It was a wonderful surprise and a wonderful presentation. It just floored me, said Mears, 78. I don't think I do as much as everybody thinks I do. Mears went on to say that she doesn't see the award as only for her, but as a recognition of hard work by multiple Park City neighborhood leaders who help organize events and a newsletter. The essay nominating Mears speaks of her efforts not only as an advocate for Park City, but her willingness to help out in neighborhoods across Decatur whenever needed. She serves on boards for the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations and National Night Out, and regularly volunteers for Decatur Memorial Hospital Hospice and Cancer Services. Involved in the Park City neighborhood since 2009, Mears said she began to expand her volunteer efforts after her husband, Eugene, died in January 2011. She is a passionate supporter of stronger relationships between neighbors and encourages people to attend neighborhood events and talk to each other. The more we know, the safer we are, she said. And an article by Chris Lisvardi, a staff writer, beginning with a photograph showing Governor Bruce Rauner addressing a town hall discussion at Park Warehouses. During Decatur visit, Rauner calls balanced budget doable. Governor Bruce Rauner said Friday during a visit to Decatur that a balanced state budget could be within reach, but isn't sure when a deal can be realized. In the meantime, groups that rely on state funding are feeling the pressure of not knowing when to expect payments from the state during the budget impasse. It should have been done months ago, Rauner said, about a budget deal. We're scrambling. I apologize. For us not to have a budget is ridiculous. Rauner spoke during a town hall meeting at the Park Warehouses facility on Mound Road that was organized by the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County. He said many people are being hurt in Illinois by not having a budget in place, whether it's public health departments or college students not receiving scholarships. There are many things being cut that I don't want to cut, Rauner said. We've got to get a budget. The legislature needs to help us. We're in a standoff. Diana Heyer is concerned about being able to provide public health services. We are in trouble, said Heyer, the Macon County Public Health Department administrator. We understand you need to make tough decisions, but consider public health. Heyer told the governor she isn't sure how to proceed after laying off 3 staff members last week and not being able to fill 12 open positions. Rauner urged the legislature to reach a compromise on key issues. He addressed a range of issues during his visit to Decatur, which included earlier stops to meet with breakfast diners at the Downtown Cafe and students at Johns Hill Magnet School. The town hall meeting was held at Park Warehouses, which is one of the oldest companies in Decatur and one of the first to undergo a major expansion related to the establishment of the Midwest Inland Port, said Gretchen Murphy, the chamber board chairman. They're very forward-thinking, Murphy said. We hope to have a governor who is forward-thinking as well. An expansion was completed in July in anticipation of increased warehousing needs with business generated from the inland port, said Bruce Stoddard, Parkinson's Inc. president. It's full right now, Stoddard said. We've surged with inventory. Stoddard hopes Rauner can help make the state more competitive and a more attractive place to do business. Stoddard said it was a historic day in the company's 160-year history, as it hadn't previously hosted a governor. Rauner said part of his focus is on helping businesses in Decatur, which he sees as an area that has suffered due to high unemployment. The state can be judged based on what happens to Decatur, Rauner said. If I do my job well, Decatur will be booming, Rauner said. Everything hinges on having a healthy economy and outstanding education. Rauner is open to considering the idea of expanding casino gambling in places such as Decatur, as it could generate needed tax revenue, rather than having people go to other neighboring states, including Indiana or Wisconsin, to gamble. Decatur is strategically positioned to prosper when investment is made in the area's infrastructure, Rauner said. Capital spending should be part of the budget every year, he said. If that type of change is made, Rauner said businesses will want to locate within the state in places like Decatur. I'm going to make that a priority, he said. Illinois is the lowest in economic growth when it should be the highest, Rauner said. We're at a key turning point. This is about the future of the state. Rauner said he will continue to say no to raising taxes simply as a way to accelerate reform. Instead, he said, structural changes are needed. Rauner said unemployment will go up and businesses will leave the state if raising taxes is all that is done without significant structural reform. Rauner said he continues to meet with Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat from Chicago, House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat from Chicago, and Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel to address the budget. From Normal, by Kevin Barlow, Lee News Service Writer, UAW ratifies contract with Mitsubishi. Union employees at the Mitsubishi Auto Plant will work the remainder of their time under a new contract overwhelmingly ratified on Thursday. It's still kind of a sad day, UAW Local 2488 President Rod DeVary said Thursday. We are happy that the workers are satisfied with the agreement, but the plant will stop production in November and then close for good in May. It's really kind of a heart-wrenching time. There are really no victories here. No details about the contract were released, except that the deal governs plant operations through sale or closure, and provides assistance in employees' transitions after separating from Mitsubishi Motors North America. The union represents about 950 workers. The voting began at 5 a.m. Wednesday and ended at 5 a.m. Thursday at the Union Hall in Bloomington. Details of that agreement were explained to union members during a meeting Monday at U.S. Cellular Coliseum. The agreement was ratified by a 697-103 vote. We are extremely pleased with this agreement, said MMNA Manufacturing Division President and CEO Ryosuke Kagamoto in a statement released by the company. It sends a clear message that MMNA is appreciative of the unwavering commitment our employees have had to Mitsubishi Motors for more than 25 years. Production of the Mitsubishi Outlander Sport, the plant's only model, is scheduled to end November 30th. Some additional plant operations are tentatively scheduled to continue through May. As the plant nears the end, DeVary said employees will have to start focusing on the future. We are still hopeful and remain optimistic that a buyer will be found, he said, but everyone is also going to have to start pursuing other employment. That goes for any company or anybody else who is directly impacted by this closure. We have already seen layoffs with the Bloomington Normal Seating Company, and those employees and their families are in our thoughts as well. DeVary noted the UAW's appreciation of the community's support since news of the closure. We really want to thank the community because there has been a lot of support and it is appreciated, he said. We are just going to keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best that a buyer can be found quickly. And from Decatur by Allison Petty, Scareport race to span Decatur Airport runway. Ever wanted to go for a jaunt down the runway at Decatur Airport? The Decatur Park District is offering the chance to do just that on Saturday, October 24th, with a Halloween-themed running event called Scareport. The evening race will include a 5K, 10K, and Tot Trot. Other communities have offered similar events, Airport Director Tim Wright said. We figured we would put our hat into the ring, he said. We thought how fun it would be to run at nighttime with the runway lights on. One of the great things about this is it brings the community out to the airport. The Tot Trot begins at 6:30 p.m., with the adult race kicking off at 7 p.m. There will be prizes in various age groups and for best costume. Registration is available at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, 1295 West Wood Street, until Thursday. Participants can also register during the early race packet pickup from 4 to 6 p.m., Friday, October 23rd, at the Gatros Aviation Hangar at the airport. Race day registration will be available from 5:15 to 6:15 p.m. at the hangar. The fee for the Tot Trot is $15, or $20 on race day. Race fee is $25, or $30 on race day. The event will also include display tables from Air Choice 1, Lambert St. Louis International Airport, Decatur Aero Club, and Experimental Aircraft Association Chapter 274. The runways will be lit, but participants are encouraged to bring headlamps, knuckle lights, or flashlights, or to purchase headlamps from the Park District for $2. Proceeds from the event will help pay for educational outreach at the airport. And health news from Decatur by Emily Steele. American Heart Association affirms CPR guidelines. The American Heart Association has released its newest CPR recommendations based on the latest scientific data from around the world. The 2015 update adds upper limits to how fast and how deep chest compressions should be done. The guidelines are updated every 5 years. The 2010 recommendations led to a major shift in how CPR is delivered by focusing more on chest compressions to keep blood flowing rather than delivering rescue breaths first. The 2015 changes, published last week in the AHA journal Circulation, are not as significant. The main thing to get out of it is there aren't any major changes, Barry Schwalbe said. To me, that means the science is sound, at least for what we know now. Schwalbe is the AHA Training Center Coordinator at Richland Community College, where CPR instructors are trained. The Heart Association still wants bystanders to call 911, jump into quickly to deliver CPR or hands-only CPR to increase survival after a cardiac arrest. The biggest thing I see is they're focusing more on the system than CPR itself, he said. Unlike the way it is often portrayed in the movies and on TV, CPR alone rarely can save someone's life. Advanced medical care is needed. According to the American Heart Association, more than 326,000 people have a heart attack outside a hospital every year. And about 90% of them die, often because bystanders don't know how to start CPR or are afraid they'll do something wrong. Everyone has a role to play in the chain of survival, from bystanders to dispatchers, emergency responders to healthcare providers, said Dr. Mark A. Krieger, president of the American Heart Association. When everyone knows their role, knows CPR, and works together, we can dramatically improve cardiac arrest victims' chances of survival. People who are CPR certified through the American Heart Association do need to take another test, unless their certificate is expired, and the new recommendations will be gradually added to course materials. The new recommendations for the public. No more than 120 compressions should be done in a minute, with a minimum of 100. Chest compressions for adults should be no more than 2.4 inches and at least 2 inches. Dispatchers should be trained to help bystanders check for breathing and recognize cardiac arrest. communities may want to consider a mobile dispatch system to notify potential rescuers in the area and improve the chain of survival with early CPR. And from Decatur by Chris Luzvardi, staff writer, succession planning found lacking. Companies aren't always getting employees in the right seats to succeed, which David Weller said shows the importance of succession planning. Weller was one of the speakers last week during the Decatur Area Society for Human Resource Management annual leadership conference held at Richland Community College. "They're missing out on figuring out who will be the next leader," said Weller, a principal with St. Louis-based Leadership Alliance, which helps organizations in a variety of industries with the selection and development of employees. Less than 25% of companies believe they have a ready-now talent pipeline. Companies often confuse performance with potential, Weller said. "Equality and equity are not the same," he said. "In sports, we can see it. It's easy to keep score. Employees within an organization can work their way up by doing things such as establishing a track record of being able to navigate challenges and learning from experience," Weller said. Weller's presentation was one of several made throughout the one-day conference on topics ranging from employment law to health care reform. "A topic of discussion for the past several years during the meetings has been health care reform," said Tony Johnston, president and chief operating officer for CIBC of Illinois. "We're still talking about it," Johnston said. "It keeps on changing." "More changes are coming in 2016, Johnston said. Among them is which groups qualify for community rating, which is used to determine premiums offered based on how many people are enrolled in the plan, and more can be charged in areas where health costs are high. With community rating, insurers can't raise premiums based on health status like they could in the past. Everybody is in the same pool," Johnston said. "Rates for groups with fewer than 50 participants are based on the community rating, while those with more than 51 are health ranked," Johnston said. "Although changes were being considered to include medium-sized groups in the community rating system," he said, "Illinois is expected to keep 50 as the threshold." "Companies have been trending towards self-insured group plans," Johnston said. "Those companies can lower the risk of insurance providers by taking on more risk while offering participants lower premiums. "It's time to take a look at it," Johnston said. He said companies should work with their tax advisors to ensure forms are filed properly to comply with the changing regulations. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for October 19th, 2015. Please stay tuned. Thank you.